Hello, and welcome to Cadenza Montreal on CJLO 1690. I'm Stephanie Manning, and we have an exciting episode for you today. We've got an interview with two members of the Ligeti Quartet, who are going to be performing at Sal Borgi this weekend. And that will come a bit later in our episode, because we also have a live interview with conductor Aleem Chan, who is going to be on the podium with the Orchestra Metropolitan this week. So super exciting interviews, both of them. So I figured we would get started with some music, of course, since we will be talking, I think, for a good chunk of the show today. And so we have, of course, Scheherazade, which will be performed at the Orchestra Metropolitan this week. There is a concert tomorrow night, and then on Friday will be the Montreal concert at the Maison Symphonique. So here we have the Orchestra Symphonique de Montréal recording with conductor Charles Dutoit of the third movement from Rimsky-Korsakov's classic piece Scheherazade.
Thank you. Traveling seems almost like a necessity, either for the pleasure of discovering new places or to visit friends and family. However, in a time of increased awareness about our environmental impact, Via Rail might provide the answer you need. Not only does Via Rail offer a solution to the problem of travel's carbon footprint, but does so at low cost and with great comfort. But don't just take it from me. Here are two members of the Concordia community who can speak to their own experiences traveling with Via.
I love taking Via Rail because I like the quiet pause and relaxation it incorporates into my travel. I always meet really cool people on the train and enjoy taking the time to have interesting conversations with my fellow travelers about where they come from and where they're going.
I've used Via Rail quite a few times and I really like it. It's accessible price-wise, even for students, and it's super, super convenient. I'll definitely keep using them.
Go to viarail.ca to learn more about pricing options for students and young people so you can start making a difference and saving money with your travel today.
Welcome back to CJLO 1690. This is Cadenza Montreal, and I am joined live by Aleem Chan, who is the principal conductor of the Antwerp Symphony Orchestra in Belgium. She'll be making her first appearance with the Orchestra Metropolitan this week in a program titled 1001 Drums. Aleem, welcome. So happy to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
So, Aleem, you had a pretty busy October with performances across the U.S. in San Francisco, St. Louis, Los Angeles, and now you're here in Canada to make your Orchestra Metropolitan debut, and the first concert is tonight. Mm-hmm. So what's going through your mind before your first performance with this orchestra?
Well, it's always, of course, concert day has a sort of special routine. You know, I try to stay calm and just like keep everything quite relaxed because I have to save a lot of energy for the first concert tonight. But we have been working really hard the last 2 days. We've been very busy preparing a huge program with three fantastic pieces. I'm very excited because, of course, too, it's also my first time being in Montreal. So actually, I just took a walk this morning around the city and just to see some like last bits of the colors of the autumn. I'm preparing for the energy for tonight.
Yeah, that's great. And I also often take walks around the city as well. I'm still relatively new here, and it's great to see the autumn colors.
Yes. Yep.
I read that that usually everyone has their own pre-concert routine. I read that you try to take 30 minutes on the afternoon of a concert to relax and then maybe do some jumping jacks or stretches before going on stage. Is that still your process?
Yeah, I think the nap is really essential. Even if I can't really fall asleep, it's just good to, you know, close the eyes. Sometimes I just even lay on the floor to have this sort of centered feeling and sort of a restart to sort of reboot the body and the mind before going on stage. And to sort of also, you know, trick the body that, you know, it's like, you know, because when you wake up in the morning, there's this freshness of energy and this sort of, newness to everything. So I try to do that before concert. I'm also, very aware of how much energy actually the body needs and the mind as well. So definitely to do some exercise to warm up the body. I do boxing. That's my hobby. When I'm at home, I go to the boxing studio. And so it's just really important to get the body active. And then so the whole body can feel the music impulse and, you know, because everything is awake, you know, that moment to be available for everyone in the orchestra.
Yeah, absolutely. Things take a lot of energy, and this program is long and wide-ranging. There's some great pieces on it. And of course, the longest one would be Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, which is, you know, a staple in the orchestra repertoire. And it also seems like this is kind of a signature piece for you. I've noticed it's often on the program when you make debuts with your orchestras. Do you think it's a good introduction to who you are as a conductor?
Yeah, because actually this piece was also at the start of my career. Back in 2014, December when I was at the final round of the Donatella Flick LSO conducting competition. And, you know, to be able to conduct this piece at in London with the LSO, of course, was a huge honor, but also, you know, was, you know, it's just sort of like a Cinderella moment to have this piece with me at the end of the competition and then to have won the competition that night. So, and you can imagine then that piece has stayed in my heart and also, you know, in my career as well. And I'll of course find this piece amazing in the sense that, and I identify a lot with my story, because as a woman nowadays, to be able to tell your story, and you know, there are a lot of course difficulties and challenges along the way. I mean, being a conductor is very difficult. It's not an easy career, but it's such a rewarding experience. So you know, in nowadays world, and as a woman to you have to really be brave, you know, to tell your story, and despite, you know, people telling you no, or you know, and or whatever comes your way. And so I find myself in that sense feeling like Scheherazade myself. So, and I just love the way the orchestra sounds in this piece. I mean, Rimsky-Korsakov is such a masterful orchestrator. He knows how to make an orchestra sound good. So every time I just, and I love storytelling. I and every orchestra just have so much fun playing this piece. So I thought, you know, what is a better way to have the orchestra get to know me, and me getting to know the orchestra with this piece?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that how you kind of connect, you know, your own experience to that of Scheherazade. For our listeners who aren't familiar, could you maybe like explain the story a little bit of Scheherazade and sort of why that connects so much to you?
Yeah. So of course, well, it's some of the very famous stories of the Arabian Nights, and the music itself, and Rimsky-Korsakov also, you know, from the very beginning of the music and the story, you know, that we have a very scary sultan who basically doesn't trust women. He just finds that, you know, that they are not loyal to him. So every night he would just kill his wife. And then the next day he would marry another one, and then the wife cannot entertain him, and then he would, you know, again kill them off. Until he encountered Scheherazade, who is very clever, that every night she tells him a story, a fascinating, enchanting tale, but she would always, you know, end the night in the middle of the tale. So that the Sultan has to, you know, because he wants to know what happens to the story, so he has to keep her alive for another day, right? And then, of course, this extends and then extends, and then she could keep her life safe. Which is, I find this very interesting in that sense, like many women nowadays. I mean, over time now we get to have our voices heard more, we get more chances, and, you know, as a woman conductor, you know, I'm still in a men's world. And in many cases I have to prove triple hard to have the same, maybe, recognition in that sense, which, of course, the world is changing, and it's, you know, we're in a better place now, but still a lot of work has to be done. So I find myself in that sense embodying the spirit of Scheherazade. You know, I have to find ways to be clever, but yet, you know, just put in the dedication and hard work to keep doing what I love.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. And the concert's title is 1001 Drums, so it's a play on this 1001 Nights from Scheherazade. And then the drums part is referencing the Peter Utvush piece, Speaking Drums for Percussion and Orchestra. And this is quite the piece. I just sort of listened to it for the first time myself last night. And so you've got, like, you know, soloist usually mic'd, speaking to the drums. There's so much, like, percussion equipment on stage. Like, what is the challenge and the reward with, like, accompanying a percussionist as the conductor?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the soloist this week is Dominic, who is actually my partner as well. But of course, he's also a super outstanding percussionist. And I find, you know, accompanying a percussion concerto is fascinating, because, of course, when we think of a more classical work, like a violin, a piano, a concerto, which we all, you know very well, you have one instrument. But for percussion concerto, you will see, like, basically the whole stage is filled with toys, with different kinds of instruments. And when you talk about percussion, you know, it's a huge family of different things. Basically, anything you can bang on and make a sound, that can be a percussion. You know, that can be included as a percussion instrument. So you will see drums. You will see, you know, basically different kinds of drums as well. You see also different keyboard instruments. So it's basically like a kid. You go into the room and you just see toys spread it all over the floor. So this is what you will see tonight or in the next 3 days if you come to the concert. And I find that fascinating because basically the sounds, you know, that are made by the soloist is just multi-colorful, like because it comes from different things. So the orchestra as well, you know, I saw them, they were just fascinated because you see the soloist have to like jump around different stations because you have different setups for different movements, you know, let alone that he's also speaking and acting because it's full of theater. At one point of the piece, the trumpet player has to come to the front of the stage and make a duet with him, and the percussionist in the orchestra also are involved in this piece. So I'm just saying, it's really like, I think we're entering a playground where there's this kid basically finding out about, can I teach the drum speak? You know, and then the drums also take on its own life after you cast a spell. It's a little bit really maybe think of Sorcerer's Apprentice by Dukas, or like think of the Disney Fantasia when Mickey Mouse was teaching, making spell, and then the brooms come alive. It's a really like that, you know. It's just so much fun, like magic comes alive.
Yeah, it's a great piece. There's so much going on. And how has it been to kind of put this together? There's, you know, all these moving parts, and especially with an orchestra that you like maybe don't know well since you're coming in for the first time. How has it been to sort of manage that with them?
Yeah, first of all, I'm really impressed by the orchestra because they are so prepared. And that is something, you know, I could tell from the first rehearsal, because especially when you talk about a piece like the Erdfisch, right, with the percussion concerto, which is a contemporary piece, and it's not the easiest to coordinate. But they were so prepared, and, you know, and I just come in and I told myself I just have to be very clear so that, you know, to basically facilitate the process, because there are a lot of movements, a lot of counting, you can imagine, you know, not so in that sense direct, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit complexities to this, but I was just the whole time with the solos, we were thinking it just worked because everyone was so focused and everyone is prepared, everyone knows what is coming next. So of course we go back to fine-tune a few things, but I find the process very smooth, and we were very happy, and so we were very excited about showing this piece tonight.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and then to round out the program, last but not least, of course, we have this Midnight Hour by Anna Klein, and so which is inspired by two poems, so there's really a lot of sensory imagery. Like, what strikes you the most about this piece?
Anna Klein, This Midnight Hour, has also been a piece that I have now done quite a number of times. And it's a piece that I've somehow just loved since the first time I heard it. I think I was totally taken by the power and the drama and the colors of the piece. You know, it's like sort of 10 to 12 minutes long. But in this short amount of time, like you said, the music was based on two poems. The first poem is a Spanish poem, and it literally is very short, right? It only says, basically, a naked woman, you know, running wild into the night, basically. So it's a very clear message, like, with this, basically, a bit madness, but then, you know, with an image of a naked woman doing this. And that's the beginning, when you hear these low strings, just, you know, like, wow, it really, like, have this sort of rawness and like this frenetic energy comes through. At the same time, the second poem, which is in French, and it's talking about this melancholy of the evening with flowers and perfume, and I mean, it's a bit more poetic and vague in its sense. But as the piece goes on, and then we travel to also different senses. Sometimes I feel the piece is a little bit schizophrenic, but in a good way, because it goes into episodes of what she's describing or where the music is bringing, and. When all this comes to the end, and there's this beautiful moment of you will see two trumpets going to the side of the orchestra, and they're playing, sort of echoing each other on this beautiful folk melody, you really feel, wow, like it's like after a storm or a wild dream, you get the release of, you're finally, maybe it's all memory, or maybe it's a dream, or not. So I just find it like a psychological ride of different emotions, drama, and I love, again, Anna Klein can make the orchestra sound so powerful, and all these different aspects or combinations of colors that you didn't hear before, totally different from Rimsky-Korsakov. I just find that you have both the Anna Klein and the Rimsky-Korsakov, that you can, it's just showcase how great an orchestra can sound. So it's I think the audiences are in for a great ride.
Absolutely, yeah. Sounds like there is something for everyone in this program. So we are, unfortunately, we're about out of time, but I wanted to, again, thank you for joining us and to wish you the best of luck in your concerts this evening, tomorrow, and Friday.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. And so, again, that was Aleem Chan, the principal conductor of the Antwerp Symphony Orchestra in Belgium. And so she will be performing with the Orchestra Metropolitan tonight, November 1st, tomorrow, November 2nd, and Friday, November 3rd. That Friday concert will be the one in the Maison Symphonique in Montreal. So we will be looking forward to that. We're going to transition a little bit before I play the pre-recorded Ligeti Quartet interview. We are going to hear some of the Ligeti piano etudes that, as you will hear from the interview later, inspired some new compositions that the quartet is going to premiere. So this is French pianist Pierre-Laurent Amard, and this is his recording of one of Ligeti's famous piano etudes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back to CJLO 1690, and you're listening to Cadenza Montreal. What you just heard were two of Georges Ligeti's etudes for piano, his piano etudes, performed by the pianist Pierre-Laurent Hamard. And those are the inspiration for some new works commissioned by the Ligeti Quartet. They are a string quartet who have been commissioning a group of works based on Ligeti's piano etudes. And these works are for string quartet, of course, so that they can play them. And they will be performing some of these at Salbogie on Sunday the 5th at 2:30 p.m. So I had the pleasure of speaking with two of the members of the quartet the other day, and I have the pre-recorded interview with them. So we're going to take a quick ad break a few minutes early so that I can play the interview in its entirety. It's about 14 minutes. So we will take the ad break and return with the Ligeti Quartet.
Envie de films audacieux qui renouvellent le langage du cinéma?
Pour un accès privilégié aux visions les plus stimulantes et diversifiées du cinéma documentaire, les RIDM sont le festival à ne pas manquer.
Ça se passe du 15 au 26 novembre à Montréal.
Rendez-vous au ridm.ca pour tout savoir sur la programmation.
Les rencontres internationales du documentaire de Montréal. Là où toutes les histoires se rencontrent.
Welcome back to CJLO 1690. We have Patrick Dawkins and Valerie Wellbanks here. They are the second violin and cellist, respectively, of the Ligeti Quartet, a string quartet from the UK. The quartet is named after the composer Georges Ligeti, whose 100th anniversary is this year. And they're coming to Montreal for Salbogie's Ligeti Festival and will perform on November 4th and 5th. So Patrick and Valerie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
So the quartet has been around since 2010, but I read this is your first Canadian tour. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're very excited. I think we hoped even to go to Canada a few years ago, but then the pandemic happened. So, you know, this is the comeback. Yeah.
I'm from Canada. I'm from Ottawa, and I studied for about 6 years at the Conservatoire in Quebec, and so I'm very excited to come do some concerts back home.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So I was going to say, what excites you about coming to Canada? So Montreal is the first stop, but then you'll also be stopping in Toronto.
Well, partly we just like traveling, and we also like sharing the music we're playing. So we. You know, particularly in this anniversary year of Ligeti, we feel it makes sense for us to be sharing Ligeti's music more widely if we've chosen his name for our group. And also we have some works by Canadian composers that we're playing, and two of them will be premiered in Montreal. I mean, those will be the Canadian premieres, in fact, the North American premieres, of pieces by two Montreal-based composers, Nicole Lisée and Anna Sokolovich.
Right, and so those are part of the Nouvelle Etudes, right? The premieres of... So for the audience, these are like 14, I believe, 14 new compositions that were... premiered just this year by the quartet and commissioned by?
By us, with the support of the Britain Peers Foundation, Britain Peers Arts.
BBC Radio 3.
Salbogie.
Salbogie themselves, also the Vaughan Williams Foundation.
And some private donations as well.
Yeah.
So obviously, this is a big year for us. It's, you know, the centenary of the person that we're named after, and we wanted to have a suitable tribute. So we commissioned 15 new pieces. So there's the 14 Nouvelles Etudes and the composer's son, Lucas Ligeti, who is a phenomenal musician and composer, has written a 12-minute piece for us as well, which will be playing at Salbogie.
Right, and so you premiered all of that in June, mm-hmm. right? And how is it to premiere everything like that all at once?
Yeah. It's tiring.
Yeah, that day was really fun because we had, similarly to Salpozhi, it's a kind of Ligeti-focused day of the festival that we played at. And so Salpozhi is doing a Ligeti weekend, which is great. But yeah, in June, we had three concerts in one day and we played pretty much all of Ligeti's chamber works for a string quartet.
Including all the solo pieces.
Solos and duos. Mm. But we felt we wanted a bit more music to play because Ligeti, while he has written some amazing string quartets, they are from 1952 and 1968. And the compositions that he wrote later in life were absolutely fantastic. And then he had a lot of development in his style and his thought about music, but he didn't write again for string quartets. We think he was going to at some point. He did have plans, but unfortunately he didn't by the time he passed away. And some of the pieces we really love are his piano etudes. So they're written in the 1980s. So we commissioned these nouvelle etudes based around the piano etudes, but from these 14 different composers. In fact, you can hear some of the piano etudes in the next concert after ours at Salpozhi. That will be Pierre-Laurent Aymard will be playing some of Ligeti's etudes interspersed with etudes by other composers.
Right, absolutely. And you mentioned earlier, so two of these etudes are Canadian composers and Montreal-based composers at that, so and Anna Sokolovich and Nicole Lisée. So since we probably don't have time, unfortunately, to talk about all of the new etudes, I was hoping maybe we could focus on those two, like what makes them special, what can the audience expect to hear from those pieces?
Well, in Nicole's piece, there's a few surprises. She really likes involving kind of extra things into the quartet. So we discovered her music with another piece of hers, Another Living Soul, where we play with some different musical toys. And she's brought some of this kind of trademark touch into this music as well. So there's a lot of really fun rhythms that exchange around the quartet. I don't want to give the kind of punchline. I don't want to give it all away.
Yeah, it's okay. You can keep the secrets for the people in the audience.
There's some baking equipment involved.
Ooh, okay.
And Anna's piece is incredibly virtuosic. It's got these very quick moving, kind of meandering lines that weave around each other. And again, some very exciting rhythms that go through it. The nature of these commissions is that they're very short and they kind of distill each composer's thoughts, you know, into something very kind of immediate. So I think they're really fun to listen to, and they're really fun to play from our perspective as well. The concept as well behind the pieces. So Nicole's piece describes a kind of microcosm of the potholes in Montreal. So she imagines the ice, you know, the icebergs of the streets melting at the end of the winter, and the potholes that are so famous in Montreal filling up with water and creating these kind of miniature lakes. So she's named it Entre Flaques, and that is a reaction to Ligeti's etude Entre Lacs. So that's a lovely little, and his humor. And Anna's piece fits into a series that she's building of very short quartet pieces on the Commedia dell'arte. And she's got a few kind of ghost pieces of characters from the Commedia dell'arte, and she's imagined some characters as well. So her piece for us is Ungherese, a kind of Hungarian character.
Of course, there's also the Lucas Ligeti piece as well that will be receiving its North American premiere.
Absolutely. It's a very important piece to us.
Yeah, that's it's still short but sweet, but it's a little more substantial than each of the Nouvelle Etude, and it's really interesting. I think it goes through, how do I say, a lot of interesting rhythmic things and a lot of interesting sound world based things,
tuning systems as well. He kind of follows on from his father's interest. Right. He works a lot in Africa, in various African countries, and is inspired by the tuning systems of various traditions. So for his piece for us, Entesis, did I say that right? Entesis. Yeah. You're telling me that I say
that's
it wrong.
That's all right.
All right. No, okay. And he divides the octave into seven parts. So you have a kind of a stack of two-thirds of a tone, which creates very interesting harmonic possibilities.
Great. And so in addition to, of course, all of these like new pieces that we've already talked about, you're of course bringing the Ligeti quartets 1 and 2. Does it feel different this year to perform them as this like big anniversary year? How has your approach to playing these quartets evolved over the years?
Yeah, it certainly feels more momentous.
Yeah, that's a great question, because we've been playing them for a long time, or we feel we've played them a lot of times. But well, one other thing is we have a new first violinist. So for about a year, we've been playing with Freya, our wonderful first violin, who replaced Mandira, you know, the composer who we'll hear from. So yeah, we feel like we have a renewed approach. Freya has learned these for the first time, these quartets this year, as well as a lot of other new notes that she's learned. And yeah, we've always wanted to kind of refresh our playing of these quartets, and so this was a nice opportunity.
It's music that lends itself to kind of constant re-exploration and rediscovery.
Yeah, I think I could listen to these, you know, still 100 times and not get tired.
You were asking us about what the audience can expect as well in this program, and I think there's a lot of theatricality involved in Ligeti's quartet and also in the rest of the program. But just to give you an example of Ligeti's humor, which we've referenced a few times already, but I think is a really important part of his language. We play off iPads, but for Ligeti's second quartet, we use the paper scores because they're absolutely enormous. And when you turn the pages, they do a kind of whooshing sound. And he actually writes this in to one of the middle movements. And he instructs the players to turn the page one at a time. So you can really hear this whoosh, 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 whoosh. And then right after that, he writes a passage in the music that's kind of imitating the sound of that page turn.
So it seems like his humor really infuses the music in a way. Is that sort of your approach as a quartet? Like, do you try to like keep bringing that to everything you do, you know, have,
right,
you know, yeah, really high standards of playing, but also keep it light.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think people probably don't think of Ligeti's music as light in general, in the impression, because you might come to it through things like the Stanley Kubrick films, the Eyes Wide Shut and 2001. Yeah, things where the music is very dark, in fact. So, but those not necessarily the rule. And I mean, don't think he was ever explicitly humorous, even in pieces like Poème Symphonique for 100 Metronomes. It, you know, you could laugh at it, but you could also take it very seriously. And I think, yeah, you can do that with all his music. But really, if you hear it live, it just has so many dimensions to it, including comedy and, yeah, just not taking anything too seriously.
There's a lot to this concert that you guys will have on Sunday. But, of course, there's also the concert on Saturday where you're going to be side by side with musicians from, I believe, McGill and the Université de Montréal. Is that right? And playing Ramifications.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a really amazing piece. So it's for 12 string players, split into two groups that play a quarter tone apart. But it's, yeah, the it's very gripping music, really. It's kind of something you might imagine should be in a film. if it isn't already.
It's only 12 minutes in length, but yeah. I think you really feel, as a player and as an audience member, a kind of journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's exciting about playing it with students?
It's great just introducing people to the music if they haven't played it already. And then also it's a very different way of playing string chamber music. Ligeti builds these wonderful textures of rhythms that might be a combination of threes and fours and fives and six, even up to nine as a division of the beat. But the resulting sound is this very smooth, wavering kind of, he might say, static. It's like this atmosphere that just gets built up out of these rhythms. So you don't feel you're playing something rhythmic, but you have to calculate all the time as you're going. And then, well, there's an amazing moment in the middle for double bass. I kind of wish I played that instrument.
Not an instrument that gets the spotlight all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's about everything I had for today. So thank you again so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for talking to us.
So that was the two members of the Ligeti Quartet, Patrick Dawkins and Valerie Wellbanks. It was such a pleasure talking to them and learning about their upcoming concert this weekend. So that is about we are about almost to the hour for this episode of Cadenza Montreal. I think I just have time to play one quick movement or two from this. I was looking at more upcoming concerts. You know, so much going on. Don't have time to talk about everything, but tomorrow night at the Maison Symphonique, there is a trumpet and organ concert. This is a concert without orchestra. Raul Prieto Ramirez on organ, and trumpet is Lucien Renaudin Vary. And one of the pieces on that is this trumpet sonata in C major by a composer I hadn't heard of, Giovanni Bonaventura Viviani. Each movement is quite short, and it's trumpet and organ, so obviously perfect fit for this concert. So that will be how I play out the show today. Thank you again so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed both interviews. They were both quite fun to do, again, with the Ligeti Quartet and Ilium Chan. So please check out those concerts if you have time. And that's all about it for me today. And have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. ¶¶